That funky beat means it's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace.
Squarespace!
They made that possible, bringing DLC to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2N1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the man who is here every week because it takes two to make a thing go right, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Oh, man, I had a funny joke all queued up, but I think the guy did that song just passed away.
That's why I did that. Yeah, it's sad, man. DJ Easy Rock died this week.
I was ready to go with, Warner Brothers tapped me to direct Justice League 2 after Justice League 1 bombs. But then you had to just throw death in the mix. Hey, welcome to video games. By the way, this awesome guy died. Well, let's talk about games.
So his real name was Rodney Skip Bryce, and sadly he passed away at age 46. Helped make one of my favorite songs of all time. I want to rock right now. I'm Rabase and I came to get down. I'm not internationally known, but I'm known throughout the microphone because I get stupid. I mean, outreach, just stay away from me if you can take.
Okay, royalties still apply.
So dang it!
Yeah, shorten that quote a little bit and.
Well, as you know, DLC, of course, is your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. But this week, DLC has a whole new meaning because if you think you like Game of Thrones, well, we've got our own Dragon Lady in Chief, the Escapist's own, our friend, the amazing Miss Andrea Renee. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Hey, thank you. I don't know how I feel about being called Dragon Lady.
Well, but... I didn't want it to sound... I thought you would take it in the way it was intended, because we don't have an M in DLC, so I couldn't say Mother of Dragons, so I went Dragon Lady. I think I was trying to make it a term of endearment, and I hope you took it as such.
Oh, of course, of course. Thank you for having me. I'm excited I finally get to be on. I know you guys have been doing this for a little while now, and I've been jealous... that I haven't been able to make it.
Well, it's my shame that it has taken us 17 episodes to get you on, but I'm glad you are a friend and one of the most knowledgeable people about video games I know, so I'm glad to have you here. For a really big week in a lot of ways, we have lots of news, so I think we need to get to the story of the week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Story of the week, of course, is the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important stories of the week. So, Andrea, I'm curious what you think. Oh, I should also mention that as listeners to the show, you can submit stories of the week all week long via Twitter using the hashtag DLCSOTW. That's DLC Story of the Week. And we got lots of submissions this week. So, Andrea, I'd like to know what you think the most important story of the week is.
Man, it's so hard to say because there's such a wide gamut of things depending on what your preference is as a gamer. But I think, we kind of have to go with all of the Destiny stuff that's out. I think that's probably the most interesting. The other stuff is kind of like... I don't know. The MLG thing, I think we all have something to say about having, Call of Duty be submitted as part of the X Games is a really interesting story. I don't know if it's the biggest news.
Well, let's start with that Destiny stuff because tons of previews hit today, right before we went to air here. And so the embargo lifted for some of the earliest hands-on Destiny stuff. Were you one of the people with connections that got to go to Bungie and play Destiny?
Oh no. I did not get invited to go. From what I was told, it was a very small group of people, even though it doesn't seem like it was a very small group of people. But no, I did not get to go and check out Destiny. So I, like all of you, will be checking out other people's coverage.
Well, this, of course, is Bungie's upcoming multi-platform shooter slash... I don't know if you can call it an MMO, but I think it's what MMOs are becoming. It's the new generation of what MMOs are, where it really is sort of blurring the line between single player and multiplayer. And it sounds like all these previews are saying, boy, it sure feels like Halo. What's your take, Andrea? Why did you think this is so important?
I think it's important because it's really the first shooter, I think, that's going to venture into that MMO space that could potentially be successful. Obviously, we've seen others before. It's not the first one. But I think you're taking, you know, a really well-known developer like Bungie, who has a huge pedigree with the Halo franchise, and putting them into this always online space, and I really am excited to see what they're going to do. Yes, it absolutely looks like Halo. There is no question about that, right down to some of the weapon design. But I don't think that's a bad thing. Halo is an amazing franchise.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by how they are managing the multiplayer aspects of the game. It sounds so smart. It fixes, in fact, a lot of the stuff I was mentioning even last week about the Elder Scrolls Online, which is, it sounds like with Destiny, you get to be single player when you want to be single player, and you get to be MMO when you want to be MMO. When there's a big old fight that you want to be a part of, you just shoot the bad guy and you join in the big fight with all the crazy people. And when you want to wander around and show off your awesome looking loot that you've been earning through the game, you get to have these cool hub worlds that are populated with, you know, dozens and dozens of other players, and you all get to show off your cool loot. But then when you leave that hub world, pop, you're back into a single player game. You don't have people messing up your world or doing things that are distracting or can throw you out of the fiction, or, you know, there's not 27 guys camping a boss spawn. You can be single player when you want to be single player, but you get all the fun trappings of MMO. Christian,
I was MMO for like a couple of years, but then like I found MMO like wasn't super faithful to me. So like then now I'm single and I'm loving it. I could just go single whenever I want, and when I want an MMO, I just call up somebody, and I'll just call them on my phone. I'm like, yo, let's MMO, and then like when I'm done with it, I'm back to single, and it's so much more fun. Party to the single people. Let me
Christian
hear you.
With the Us Weekly take on the Destiny preview.
Destiny, just like us. Look, they go shopping, just like us.
So what is your honest take, actually, about this? What is your real take on this Destiny preview? It felt to me like, oh my God, we got to play it, but we didn't really get to play the really interesting stuff, and we didn't really get to see the things that are really going to make it stand apart. What we actually got to see was, hey, it's a shooter. Hey, it's made by Bungie. Yeah. Hey, it feels like Halo. Hey, the shooting parts are going to be really fun. No surprise to anyone.
Yeah, all the stuff that I'm, you know, interested and jazzed about, like, you know, they mentioned it, it seems, like, you know, how every weapon is kind of, has its own progression, or, you know, its own stat tracking, and you level up every item and stuff like that. Like, it's the stuff that makes this, and I know they try to say it's not Borderlands at the preview event, but it's the stuff that makes it like Borderlands 2.0, or like the next evolution of that Diablo loot meets first person shooter. You know, get the posse together and go have fun. Like, that's the stuff that I'm excited about in Destiny. And it's great and reassuring to hear that the game controls well and you know, plays competently. But when Bungie was making a game, I was just assuming that. You know what
yeah.
I mean? This isn't like...
yeah, no news.
New studio, Billy Games to make Destiny. I'd be like, okay, let's see if they can make this. But it's like they did a good job. Yeah, Halo, it's always played well. So I'm still excited for it. I understand why they don't want to have everything out already, because the game still has months to come out. But sometimes I feel like this, I almost got excited for this preview, and now I'm almost let down by preview coverage because I didn't get to hear what I wanted to hear. So it's this weird, like, anticlimactic feeling for me.
It's also, like, in a really weird position, right? Like, why would they choose to do some kind of extensive preview like this right before E3?
Yeah, well, I think it's because E3 is so crowded and they like having to, you know, their own, and we're leading our show with it, right? They're having their own news cycle that is devoted to, hey, it's cool, Destiny, it should be on your radar going into E3. So I think that's probably smart. And all these PR, you know, teams have their plans of rolling out stuff, and so they dribble a little here, they dribble a little there, and they hold back stuff intentionally so they have big announcements up to the release September 7th, I guess it is.
I think it's interesting in the chat room, Jaff Inch says it sounds like Guild Wars, and he means that in a good way, which I think it does sound a little bit like Guild Wars with a shooter. You know, it's a shooter version. And I think that that's a really great template upon which to build a MMO experience, in the sense that you're creating a multiplayer situation inside, or, you know, adjacent to a single player situation, and you as the player can kind of control how you jump in and jump out of that, which is pretty cool, I think. But again, not tons of new info here, just the sense of people getting their hands on. It looks pretty. It shoots well. I think we're all still just as amped as we were before.
Yes.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
All right, Christian, what is your pitch for Story of the Week?
Oh man, it's an interesting week. There's a lot of stuff I want to talk about. I feel like a Kanata here, where there's so much I want to dive into. But the biggest story is one that broke right before we started recording, and I'm still digesting. But it's important to me because of where the X Games, the special place the X Games hold in my heart. And Andrea teased it, and it's that MLG will be part of the X Games in Austin. And it's going to be Call of Duty is the game that they're going to be playing as part of it. But, you know, these are gamers that can leave the X Games with an X Games medal that's the same as Shaun White's and anyone else. And I'm excited about it because I think it helps further legitimize gaming as a something that's competitive and serious and requires skill.
Well, I noticed you stopped short of saying sport. Is that where you were headed and you didn't say it?
I think you and I, maybe it's been off mic or maybe it was on We Can Confirm, but I feel like you and I have had this conversation. I don't consider, maybe it was a different, I don't know, maybe it was with Wombat, I don't know. I don't consider gaming to be a sport, and I don't mean that to take away from competitive gaming. I think it requires immense skill and practice and talent and things that I don't have in that field, but to me it's not sport. Last time I had this discussion, I had the Oxford English Dictionary definition of sport in front of me, and I could pull that up again. NASCAR and racing gets into a little bit of a different – I think it's closer to sport, yes, because of the physical demands that are put on you. I know – I don't
There's some physical demands in Call of Duty gaming or, you know, League of Legends. All those – there are physical aspects to those.
Let me take you on the track. I will rent a Porsche GT3, and if I'm able to take out – I'm certified – Porsche solo driver. So if I can take you out with me, I think you'll change your opinion on the physicalness of driving versus the physicalness of playing a video game. I bet I can make you throw
agree.
Up before I hit
Christian,
turn five.
Right.
Yeah, but I, you know, the physicalness of football versus the physicalness of golf is a vast difference, as my
dad
would
not
say.
I'm not trying to take away from gaming here as a skill. I'm going to pull up the dictionary so I can be a little more informed.
We don't need to argue whether something is a sport or not. I guess that's kind of just a semantic argument.
Do you think it is? I mean, I don't know. I don't want to – I think this is exciting. I think it's – I'm a little reserved. My hesitation is that it bums me out a little bit that it's Call of Duty because ESPN, in my opinion, they don't do the best job covering the X Games now, and I could just see them pumping some – you know, something off the new Skrillex album, which has some pretty good tracks on it. And then showing like Call of Duty, kill, 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 kill. This guy's name is Kill Death 41. Let's kill some stuff. Here's his medal. I love bitches. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it has the potential to be not what I want
right,
to
because,
showcase gaming.
Because NFL players and NBA players and MLB players, they don't ever have negative connotations to their sport.
Michael Crabtree is a good sport. I think you and I can both agree.
I like this comment in the chat room from AGM McLeod or whatever, AG McLeod. NASCAR is more technically a motorsport and video games are esports. So it's just a subcategory of sport, which is interesting. Andrea, what's your take on Major League Gaming being an X game?
I think it's ridiculous. Let's just come out and say it. That's how I feel.
Really?
I think what MLG is doing is awesome, and I think that there is a lot of really talented players who spend a lot of time practicing and really perfecting, you know, their gameplay, and I think that that's cool, and I'm glad that that's a whole scene. I absolutely do not think it's a sport. I don't think it will ever be considered a sport or should be considered a sport because it's just it's not a sport. I'm with Christian here. I just like, and the definition of sport, of course, is different. And like, I know you, Christian, you mentioned having like the Oxford Dictionary version, but you know, I don't know, there's something about it. And I think the thing that really kind of gets me is that I don't think that the gaming community will ever be able to view it as a sport the way that they view football or basketball or baseball as sports as covered by ESPN. I don't know. About it just doesn't feel right to me.
I want to get the listeners to weigh in on this. You can call in. Let me just give them the phone number first. You can call in at 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714 if you're listening live. And if you're not listening live and you're downloading later, we welcome you every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. You can call in and participate on the show, 512-518-5714. Okay, Christian, what were you going to say?
Okay, well, I think that the discussion as to whether or not video games qualify as sport is interesting. I would hate for this conversation about Call of Duty being included in X Games going down that path exclusively. And someone in the chat mentioned that, you know, maybe it's more akin to chess than a sport in the traditional definition.
Yeah, doesn't ESPN do the spelling bee on their channel?
They do.
Yeah.
They do. And I'm certainly open to... sport has always meant a man and a football. It's not a man and a controller. I'm certainly open to the definition of sport changing as things evolve, you know, to encompass that. But to me, that's not necessarily the important thing of this story. And so I don't want to take away focus from what I do think is the important part, which is, you know, gaming getting more mainstream and being included in larger events that aren't just about gaming. Like that, I think, is the positive and the cool thing out of this. That here's the X Games that was bringing together a bunch of events that individually weren't getting big coverage. I was an inline skater in high school, and I was the first person not to qualify for the X Games in 97. They took whatever it was, 50, and I was ranked 51st. And yeah, inline skater, I'll own up to it. But I think it's cool what they did, and they put all these sports together, extreme sports and smaller sports, and gave them a national stage. And now you have gaming as part of that, and I think that's awesome. Anytime you can get gaming exposed to a bigger, broader audience of people that might like it or be like, wow, that's cool, that does take skill. It's not, you know, the fat guy from South Park playing WoW in the basement.
Do you think that that's – I'm sorry to interrupt you, but do you think that what it's doing, or do you think it's preaching to the choir? I mean, I don't think the audience for X Games is an audience that is like, these video games are so foreign to me. You know, I don't think – you know, the X Games audience is already playing the video games, right? They know what Call of Duty is. I don't think it's shedding light on any particular kind of thing for that audience. I think it is – what it is doing is – presenting it in a context of sport. And I know that when we get into that semantic argument, it may be a little tedious and sort of talking in circles, but I think that's kind of the context that it has now been framed in. That does this kind of competition deserve to be in the same event as the kind of competition that involves rolling on things and jumping off of stuff, and you know what I mean? I think that's the pertinent discussion. So I'm curious what the audience thinks. I see that there are lots of people on the line here. I'm going to go to a call from 612 area code, and I want to know, do you think that gaming, video gaming, should be part of the X Games?
Yeah, I think it's really good that they include that in there. At the end of the day, it's really fun to watch competitive competition in any form. And I think that there's a lot of people who might give more credibility to video games if they have the opportunity to watch it with a good announcer, a good narrator. So I think it definitely fits.
Now, do you think that is about making video game into a quote-unquote sport, or do you think it's more about broadening what the X Games are about?
I think it's about broadening the X Games, and I think it's about bringing in a new audience. The X Games definitely has a certain clientele that they like to bring in, and if they can bring in a lot of the gamer types of the people who would enjoy that, they'll probably find that there's a lot of carryover, a lot of mix, and that there's a lot of overlap. So maybe they have the opportunity to expose video gamers to some of the X Games sports and vice versa, and it's a win-win for everyone.
That's very cool. Great comment. I always forget to ask a name and where you're calling from. So why don't you tell us that before we move on?
Sure. I'm Greg from Minnesota, and I'm actually the guy who signed up for Harry's last week. So thanks for the tip on that.
Oh, thank you for signing up. We appreciate you supporting the sponsor and helping make this show possible. And thanks for calling in as well. That's a great call. It's a really interesting topic, I think. Yeah, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, Christian, on the sort of like, who cares about whether it's called a sport or not? But I think that that's the question that's raised. That's the pertinent question. And maybe it is exposing it to more people, or maybe it is legitimizing it, quote unquote. But I feel like if it was being, I don't know, if it was being televised on NBC next to, you know, the Masters tournament, then now we're talking serious legitimization. But X Games, I think no one over a certain age is tuning into the X Games anyway, right? So I don't know. It seems to be more of a preaching to the converted, but that's just me.
What's your, if Andrea, I don't want to move on. Is there more you wanted to add here? I was going to ask Jeff his story of the week, but I feel like maybe I had cut you off earlier.
No, you didn't cut me off earlier. I think that it's an interesting idea what Jeff was bringing up about the X Games and the legitimacy of the X Games. I mean, it's easy for us to maybe sit and judge whether or not video games should be included, because, like, do the X Games themselves really matter anymore?
Oh, wow. That's a really interesting question. I mean, just calling it the X Games is like, what year is it, 1996? But yeah, that's an interesting point, too.
The X Games still matter. Just because the Olympics keep stealing their sport, that doesn't mean that the X Games don't matter. Come on. Former rollerblader getting angry, spandex getting tight.
You don't want him to roll right into you. He'll be so angry, he might skid out or something.
My rollerblades, and I appreciate them.
I appreciate rollerblades too. Actually, I'm so old school. I have roller skates, and I enjoy roller skating. And so I am completely obsolete at this point. Speaking of obsolete, I have to talk about the most submitted story this week. I don't think it's my story of the week, but it certainly is the most submitted story. We got so many submissions using that hashtag DLCSOTW at Fragos, at Adam Rita, at GH Baker, at Greedy Raven. It goes on and on and on. So many people submitted this story about the mythical ET cartridges being dug up in the desert in Alamogordo, New Mexico. So if you're not familiar with this story, there was what many people thought was just an urban legend about the idea that Atari had so much – they expected to sell so much product when they made this deal to make the E.T. Atari 2600 game. They spent all this money, $20 million in licensing fees supposedly. They made 700,000 copies, and then they realized they were going under. They just decided to write off the investment and buried all of these copies supposedly out in the desert. The story had been exaggerated and handed down, and nobody could really corroborate it, and nobody knew exactly where it was. And then all of a sudden, this documentary crew decided they were going to prove it or disprove it. Microsoft funded Lightbox to go out into the desert and actually excavate. We talked about this several times because there were stories about, oh my gosh, they weren't going to be able to excavate it. Oh my gosh, they are going to be able to excavate it. Well, it happened. And guess what? They found Atari cartridges. So, mythology confirmed. Well, it's not really that easy. They didn't find 700,000 cartridges. They found several, and they found not just E.T. They found copies of Centipede and Phoenix. So there is clearly some truth to this, that Atari went out and buried a lot of crap in the desert and then put concrete over the top of it so nobody would see it. But it's not exactly the heights of the crazy urban legend. But it is pretty cool to see pictures of all these people, including Larry Herb from Microsoft, out in the desert holding up E.T. cartridges. And I can certainly understand why a bunch of people submitted this story this week. Andrea, what's your take on the mythical E.T. cartridges? Do we have Andrea?
Well, I agree with what Christian's about to say. And
maybe we lost her. What do you got, Christian? What's your take on this?
Well, so Wombat tweeted something.
I'm here.
Oh, she just took a break while I was talking, as is usual.
I did take a break. I was just desperately trying to find a microphone that works. Apologies. Okay, so here's the thing. Does anybody outside of people our generation and older care about this?
Well, I think video games have become such a big deal, and this is one of those stories. You know, it's like your parents telling you about, you know, the fifth Beatle or something. It's like, yeah, I wasn't around for the Beatles, but it's kind of cool that something that has become so huge has this fun story attached to it, and now somebody went out and proved it. I think it's kind of neat.
I think hopefully what will make it interesting is the documentary. I mean, did anyone care about World War II until Ken Burns did a documentary on it? Like, I mean, I would say.
Yeah.
What is this baseball thing I've heard so much about?
There were no reports, no books written about World War II until a documentary happened. Yeah.
But seriously, I think like Indie Game the movie, you know, my wife, you know, dabbles in games. Like, you know, she has a DS and stuff like that and iPhone games. But, you know, she really loved Indie Game the movie. And I think a game, you know, a really well-made documentary can be fascinating. And I think this story could be interesting. I think the conspiracy theorist is, and I think what I was saying earlier, Wombat, I think, had the best tweet on it. He said, I can't believe they found all those ET cartridges Microsoft buried in the desert last week, which is a nice pessimistic way. I think the most impressive thing is, I mean, this happened, what, 30 years ago or 20-something years ago? How do you pinpoint something? So we found these cartridges because we knew where they were in a landfill, but you know, this plane tragedy is still missing in the ocean. Well, I know the ocean is vast. It's like, how did they pinpoint in this huge landfill ET carts?
Metal detectors?
Well,
cartridge detectors.
tune in to the documentary entitled Atari Game Over, which will be coming soon. In fact, it's coming soon to what is actually my story of the week. This one submitted actually by @Ralph_Armin_geek, who is excited, as am I, about the Xbox Originals program, which got a lot more details this week rolled out. I have to remind both of you guys that on our end of the year Weekend Confirmed prediction show, my prediction was pretty much this, guys. I pretty much nailed it, that there is going to be massive amount of content, basically television quality content, video content coming out on the Xbox platform, on Xbox Live, both on the 360 and Xbox One. And they've got some really awesome sounding shows lined up. There's a lot of details in all the shows that are coming out. A Halo live action series we knew that Spielberg is producing, a Halo feature, which evidently starts shooting this week and is supposed to be coming out at the end of the year. They've got reality shows like this documentary series that's going to be called Signal to Noise, of which the ET cartridge unearthing is but one episode, and other episodes will detail the rise of the Silk Road, which is a pretty interesting topic if you ask me. Some cool other drama series like Gun Machine, which is based on the Warren Ellis novel, a comedy series called Jash in the Box. It goes on and on. This is a serious initiative from Microsoft to create really cool programming on your Xbox. Andrea, what do you think? Are you ready to watch television on Xbox Live? I think she left again. Whenever I talk, it's pretty much when Andrea checks out. I've noticed that also at parties. But Christian.
It's interesting, right? Because this is, you know, the Xbox One was built or created so that it's your all-in-one. It's your, you know, one input, and you have, you know, TVs integrated into it, and TV is such an important part of it. But then I also think that it's smart because Microsoft is like, well, crap, we see all the people that are watching Netflix and Hulu and, you know, stuff on our devices, and we want some of that. I still think they need to figure out. There's a lot to be excited about here, yes, for sure. And I'm with you. I think there's a lot of great content. I'm already into the ecosystem. I already pay for Xbox Live. I don't know if this will bring in new people. I don't know if this will get people to buy an Xbox One or a 360, you know, to access this or pay for Live. I don't know if it will be, if they'll have an exclusive like House of Cards. I know that there were Netflix exclusives before that, but that's Kevin Spacey. That was, you know, big names. Fincher produced or directed the first episode. I don't know if they have that yet. Mm-hmm. But I think it's great to have more outlets. I think in their PR releases, I've already seen things that kind of contradict each other, though. Like one of, I was trying to find the quote, like one of the execs, I think, said something about the Halo series saying, you know, we're not sure how, to what extent these will take form. And then later it was like, we'll start filming next week. And then one guy said that content shouldn't be behind a paywall on Xbox Live, but premium content should. So some shows will, some shows won't. So I feel like they did a really good job with like, here are the shows. And then as press ask more questions, they're kind of like, okay, well, we don't know, but maybe.
Yeah, which is kind of like how the Xbox One launch went also.
Exactly, which is makes me sad because I would love for this to be great. I think that they do have the hurdles that make this a little more difficult than, say, Netflix because, you know, can I watch this on my iPad or will I need, you know, my Xbox Live app and things like that. But, you know, Jash is, you know, started by like Sarah Silverman, great, you know, funny comics behind that. So that
Michael
should be
Sarah,
fun.
Tim Heidecker, Eric
Reggie,
Wenheim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's potential. It looks like they're partnering with good people to make this happen. I'm optimistic, but I think that they do have challenges ahead of them because and the other thing, sorry, I just remembered the other point about their mixed messaging where one, they said this will help, you know, keep people entertained during game droughts or something like that. And then later they said, but don't worry, this isn't going to pull our focus from making Xbox One, you know, a priority for games. So it's like on one hand, it's like, hey, watch this when there aren't games. On the other hand, don't worry, we're still making games.
Well, what do you think
about
this?
Funny, I talked about that exact same thing in a story that I did this morning on this Xbox Originals announcement, how, you know, they were so lambasted last year after they came forward in their reveal event talking about TV and entertainment the whole time. And now, you know, we have Phil Spencer, the new head of Xbox, who comes forward and says, it's all going to be about games. We're going to show you so many things about games at E3 this year. And now they're pushing this, and it launches in June. It's such mixed messaging. It's really confusing for consumers.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that I'm hoping that their E3 messaging is all about games, and that's why we're hearing about this now. And so that they really sort of are bifurcating these message streams so that, you know, we at certain times of the year we hear about this part of the Microsoft strategy and other parts of the year we hear about the gaming parts of Microsoft strategy. And
yeah,
clearly
June is E3.
Right. Well, yes, that's true. But I don't know. I'd be surprised if they come out on stage and talk about this stuff at the E3 press conference. I think that, I mean, clearly they built a box that is supposed to be your primary input. So they had greater visions than just being a game box. And I think this is the extension of that.
I want to hold your prediction making prowess to the fire, more successful premium video content or original video content stuff from Microsoft with this Microsoft Originals or the PlayStation original content coming to PSN, which do you think will be more successful?
I think Microsoft will be more successful just because I feel like they're more invested in it. And I think that they're, you know, it's a wider breadth of content. They seem to be really doubling down on that. Which isn't taking anything away from Sony. I think there might be some really cool stuff there too. It just seems like this is a bigger priority for that company. And I'm really genuinely excited about some of the stuff that they're talking about. I mean, the Winter World live action series, which is a cool graphic novel. You know, there's some really cool stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jeff. I think that, you know, Microsoft is going to definitely be the front runner when it comes to original content. I mean, just having Nancy Tellem alone as the head of all of their original programming from their office here in Hollywood, I think is, you know, really telling. And then, of course, you know, when you have guys like Steven Spielberg and Ridley Scott on board,
yeah,
you can't go wrong.
Well, you can. I mean, Prometheus, but
that's your personal opinion.
the chances of going wrong, the chances of going wrong are reduced. I agree with that.
What's your actual SOT dub?
No, that was my actual SOT dub. But I do want to mention this other story that I think is interesting, and that is this report from a company called Quilt. I don't know. They're a video solutions company, but supposedly they released numbers about Twitch streaming being more popular than any other streaming service, is the most popular by a wide margin. They currently possess 43.6% of all live streaming viewership. And that's compared to ESPN and WWE, which started its own live streaming thing. That's pretty huge, but I think it's kind of an unfair comparison because
– it's absolutely unfair.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Tell me why you think it's unfair, Andrea.
Because, I mean, when you look at what – how much ESPN or WWE or Major League Baseball actually streams, the amount of hours of content, it does not even come close to what Twitch streams.
Yeah.
And I think that it's absolutely unfair to say that Twitch and ESPN are even in the same ballpark. I mean, look at all of the production that goes into ESPN and all of the dollars involved in securing those licensing rights. Like, there's, I mean, it's apples to oranges.
Yeah, I agree. It's apples to oranges. That's well said. I mean, I think it is of note to say there's a heck of a lot of people watching Twitch, which we all kind of know, but yes, you get it. But it's almost like saying there are more channels on YouTube than there are on NBC. You know, it's like saying, well, yeah, when you have one service that allows anybody to broadcast live and another service that is showing you one channel, yeah, I think there's probably going to be more people watching the infinite channels than there are the people watching the one channel. But
and also precisely. it's only their like ESPN's online thing, which, you know, I'd watch more of, but in order to watch it where I live, I need to already have a cable package that has it. And I, you know, cut the cord a while ago and I don't have cable. And if you do have cable, why are you going to sit at your house where you have cable and watch it on your tablet? You'll watch it on your TV, like ESPN.com or ESPN3, whatever it's called now. You know, it's not a very progressive online viewing service. So yeah, those numbers aren't skewed in their favor. And WWE is a very new network that, yeah, of course, it also does not have the appeal that Twitch does. You know, it's one thing. And on Twitch, you can watch people play wrestling games. What's more fun to watch? Let's be honest.
Well, speaking of streaming services, we are one, and we have to pay our bills, so I need to tell you about our sponsor, a sponsor that I love with my whole heart. I'm genuinely so excited to have Squarespace as a sponsor. Squarespace, of course, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. What does that mean for you? It means make a website, and make it super fast, super easy, and look great. I use Squarespace every single day. I have been using Squarespace for years. They were a sponsor back in the day when I was doing the Totally Rad Show 7 years ago, and I have been so satisfied and such a happy customer of Squarespace that my personal website, jeffcanada.com, is used, housed, maintained, updated using Squarespace. It's so easy. It's got a really cool design. Everything is WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. It's all drag and drop. You can easily update content on the go. They have an app that you can use on your iPad, your iPhone, your Android. It's super easy to just throw stuff onto your website. They have 24/7 support with live chat and email that are located in New York City and Dublin. So you've got different time zones that you can use. The support is fantastic. I've used it on numerous occasions and have been so happy with the quick response and the helpfulness of everybody involved. I honestly can't recommend Squarespace higher. This is something I recommend to my friends when anybody's like, oh, I got to make a website. You know stuff. Jeff, you're the guy that knows stuff about internets. Tell me how to make a website. And I go, it's easy. Just go to squarespace.com. And not only that, because you listen to DLC, we will hook you up with a free trial and 10% off. And this is not just any kind of free trial. This is the free trial. This isn't that kind of free trial where you have to put in your credit card and then after 30 days they automatically charge you. No. Not at Squarespace. No credit card required for starting your free trial. He said, like Elmer Fudd for some reason. No credit card for your free trial. Honestly, you don't have to put a credit card in. That's so great. You can start building your website today. And then if you do decide to buy, it's so inexpensive. Plans start at $8 a month. You get a free domain name if you sign up for a year. And we will give you 10% off. All you have to do is use our promo code. Now, the only downside is that Christian got to make up our promo code. So it's VITA. VITA. Easy to remember. It's Christian's favorite console. He's always talking about the Vita. So type in V-I-T-A at checkout. Help support DLC. Get a great service with Squarespace. And be happy. That'll make you happy. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. The website is squarespace.com/DLC. Don't forget that. Squarespace.com/DLC. And then use that Vita promo code. Okay, before we move out of Story of the Week, I want to go to the phones and see what somebody else's Story of the Week might be. 720, what's your name, where are you calling from, and what's your Story of the Week?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Jeff. I'm from Rochester, New York. I kind of want to echo the whole finding buried ET cartridges thing. I think it's a good story of the week, not only just because it's cool to kind of confirm this sort of isn't urban legend thing, but it also kind of is a nice reminder that, hey, video games had a history, and maybe some of these things are worth preserving, and, you know, a company might want to throw them in a dump.
Do you think that these consoles, or at least a few of them, deserve to be in a museum? And if they do, would you go look at them?
Actually, I'm glad you asked that, Jeff. In town here in Rochester, there is the Strong National Museum of Play. And in that museum, they have a dedicated video game section where they have, you know, every single console you can think of. They try and get as many cartridges for those consoles, and they have quite an extensive arcade that is free to play as well. So just for the price of admission, it's actually a really nice arcade to get to.
That's fantastic. All of a sudden, Rochester, New York is now on my to-visit list. but one thing we can agree on, at least according to Andrea, is that there's no GD way that those cartridges are going into any kind of sport museum. all right, let's move on to the playlist. The playlist, still looking for its bumper music. So if anybody wants to send in bumper music for the playlist, we'd appreciate it. Playlist, of course, is the stuff we've been playing. Andrew, what's on your playlist this week?
I have been playing lots of Infamous Second Son.
Great game.
Yeah, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, the first couple of hours, I was really enjoying it. I really love the way that they've integrated the DualShock 4. I know some people think it's super gimmicky to use it as a spray paint can, but I think it's really cool. And the way that it just feels really natural. And I've played some other games on the PlayStation 4 that it just feels really forced. So I was really happy about that. But there's just some continuity problems that I'm having some issues with. Like, there's been some jumping around in the story that really doesn't quite make sense. And there's just a couple narrative things that I'm having problems with. But I think those problems aren't big enough to override how much fun the game is.
Yeah, I know Christian and I are both huge fans of Infamous as well. I don't know about the jumping around in the story thing. I mean, I guess I don't know if we're too early to do spoiler talk for that kind of a game.
No spoilers yet. I mean, it's still a bigger game hasn't come out yet for the PS4. Let's wait a little bit.
So you're saying we're waiting until September?
No. Watch Dogs comes out.
Oh, that's right.
In May.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Christian, are you still 100%ing that game? Are you still rocking that game?
I am. I was in Salt Lake City. I played some more Infamous. So I was on mobile and handheld. I was playing some Vita via remote play, playing Infamous via remote play. And
so this is,
man, when
this
that
is Christian's Vita Minute.
I don't want to waste any of my time. Where do I start? It worked really well for me about half the time, and the other half it didn't. Obviously, you have control problems with the Vita not having, you know, full button parity to the DualShock 4. But for what I was doing, going around and collecting orbs and just basically working on my platinum slowly but surely, it worked great when it worked. It's the type of thing that makes me wish we were 5 years further in that technology. Because that kind of stuff is, it made me giddy when it worked so well. I showed Amanda, my wife, and I was like, look at this. This is from our PS4 at home and she's like, yeah, I know. And I'm like, but you don't this is amazing.
She's like, I made a child.
Yeah, but that was with you. The child didn't start at our home and then show up at the hospital.
In a way,
that'd be amazing.
In a way, it kind of did.
No, actually, it was in a car.
Hey,
I'm just kidding.
TMI. So that...
Andrea, you speaking of Watch Dogs, though, you played a bunch of Watch Dogs, didn't you, last week?
I did play a bunch of Watch Dogs. I got about 5 hours of hands-on time with it.
That's significant. Was that the single-player campaign mode, or were there other modes?
It was both single player and multiplayer, and I also got to see the companion game, which they're saying is not a second screen experience, so don't put it in the same league as that. I have a demo up if you want to watch it and decide for yourself. But I wrote a preview piece that went up on the Escapist saying, and the title was, Why You Should Still Be Pumped for Watch Dogs, and I got a lot of flack.
Flack?
From people about
you?
That. Yeah, I know. Shocking, isn't it? about the title, not even about the actual preview piece and what
it's probably
I said.
The only thing anybody read.
Well, because
exactly.
The first line of the preview piece was just "you shouldn't," but it was just a really, really tricky title.
Oh right. Mm-hmm. Well, I actually really enjoyed the game. I had a lot of fun with it. I played it on the PS4. I said in my preview that I mistakenly thought it was the PC build because I thought it looked so great. I'm really excited for this game, and I know that everybody that I talked to last year was really excited for it too, and for some reason, because of the delay and this really asinine debate over the resolution of the way the footage looked at E3 a couple years ago and the new trailers, people are like kind of tossing it aside now, and I'm really disappointed by that because this game looks really great.
So I'm in that camp of I was really hyped, and I think because of the delay, I've lost interest. Like, what specifically still has you interested in this game? Is it just the stuff that they showed at E3 and now you got hands-on time with it and it's delivering? Or, I mean, to me, it looks kind of like a clumsy GTA, like the shoot. And again, I haven't had hands-on time with it, but like the HUD looks cluttered with the hacking, and it looks like the hacking of cell phones is kind of meaningless when you're walking around the city. The multiplayer isn't as engaged as I thought it was going to be originally when they first showed like another player was controlling that camera. Now it's its own kind of mode. Like, what specifically has you still kind of jazzed for this game?
Well, that's definitely the multiplayer I'll get to in just a second. But, I mean, this game isn't GTA. I mean, it's an open world game that has shooting and driving mechanics similar to GTA, but it's not GTA. The real focus of the gameplay of Watch Dogs is on the hacking mechanic. And it's something different that I haven't seen in a game before. And you don't really quite understand how fluidly it works when you're moving around the world until you can actually get some hands-on time with it. And what I found was that inside a couple of the story missions that I did, I mean, you don't realize just how many different ways to hack things there are and how many different types of ways you could use that as a mechanic. For example, I was trying to outrun the police in one certain section, and being able to like blow open a steam pipe to, you know, block their path or change the traffic lights to cause a collision, or even raise a bridge so that I can, you know, drive over the bridge and I raise it behind me so they can't follow me. Like, that kind of stuff I haven't seen in a game before, and I thought it was really well executed in the build that I played.
There's a person in the chat room here named Sean Nola who has the question that I have, which is, if you aren't a fan of Assassin's Creed, is there any reason to check out Watch Dogs? Or as Martin BSAS says, is it Hacksassin's Creed?
No, it's not, because it doesn't have a lot of the traversal, like parkour-inspired elements that Assassin's Creed has. Like, you are a dude. Like, you can't, like, run up walls the way that, you know, like Ezio can, or the way that Edward Kenway could. You know, you're not, like, a super-powered person. You can climb things, and what I found was when I was sprinting during combat, like, being able to slide under things and leap over things felt really fluid. Obviously, it's not the first game to do that, but, you know, it was done well. It didn't feel like broken or laggy or janky in any way. It doesn't feel like Assassin's Creed. And I can say that as someone who is a gigantic public fangirl of Assassin's Creed.
Yes.
It didn't feel like that at all, especially in the environment. I think a lot of Assassin's Creed is its, you know, themes, its periodic like setting, and how a lot of the gameplay is wrapped up in that. Especially, you know, like take Black Flag as an example. That game was all about being a pirate and being on the high seas. This game, like, the setting is just so cool. I don't know how else to describe it. It's got this really interesting kind of tech feel in an open world game that we haven't seen yet.
So were you doing missions in and out of buildings and going around? Or does it feel like Assassin's Creed in the sense that you're wandering around and looking at your map and there's icons? And or was it more linear than that? How did the experience of going from point to point feel?
Oh, it definitely felt sandbox for sure. Yeah. Like you can spend as much or as little time doing the side missions as you want. I personally spent most of my hands-on time going around doing all the side stuff because I didn't want to spoil the story mission for myself, knowing that I'd have to go back and play it again.
Yeah.
I did the first couple missions in the storyline, but then I went on a digital trip. I did a convoy, and then you can get an online, like online decryption is, I mean, the online modes are crazy. we didn't get to play Free Roam, which I was kind of bummed about. They had online Free Roam locked on the demo. I don't know why that was. I probably should have asked, but I was so busy playing the decryption mode that I didn't bother, which was a really fun mode where it's kind of like every man for himself. You jump in, you have to try to capture this file, and then once you have the file in your possession, there's like a timer to decrypt the file, and while it's decrypting, you have to protect it from other players that are trying to steal it from you. And that's the only mode that they have a team-based PvP in, where it can actually put you onto teams, and then you have to protect the file keeper from the other people trying to steal the file. And it's really weird because, like GTA Online, you can, like, jump in cars and, like, chase after people. And I don't know. I had a lot of fun with it.
That sounds cool. I mean, I have learned about myself after buying every single one of them and being dissatisfied pretty much every time, that I'm not really an Assassin's Creed guy, but and that has left me a little bit cautious about Watch Dogs. But hearing you talk about how different it is, I'm definitely going to give it a shot and see if I like it. Christian, what's on your playlist, buddy?
So yeah, I did Infamous via remote play, and Hearthstone was still chugging away on my iPad's battery.
So
that's
great.
Where I was. Salt Lake Hotel, good internet at night in the bed with, you know, our daughter sleeping in the crib in the same room with us. So, you know, I'm not watching TV. It's on my iPad. I have a Retina Mini, and holy moly, that game still looks gorgeous.
Let's get to deets.
Okay.
What class are you playing?
I'm bad at specifics of details. I would need to look it up. I'm a slow gamer. I'm still your, was it the mage? Your first woman?
Oh, yeah.
Your first woman?
Mage, yeah.
And I'm having fun going through, and it's interesting because, you know, you're so, I feel like you are such a card player, magic guy,
yeah,
that, you know, you have experience with these games, where to me, I get a new card and I'm like, whoa, how does this change my possibilities? What does this do? And it's like, you know, we've talked about when we play tabletop games, I want to understand the system. Like, so if this card is in, how does that impact what else I can do? Whereas oftentimes in the video games I'm used to playing, it's like you get the new thing and that's the thing you want, right? Like, oh, I have this gun. That's the gun I want now. Now I go shoot with this, or I get this power and I have the sweet power and it doesn't take away my other powers. Whereas this game, you know, you're building your deck. To me, this is a new experience for me, a new world to get into. So I'm having fun just, oh, okay, so now I don't have that. How does that affect my build? And then the bigger thing that I think is interesting about this, when I'm playing online with people, so far the matchmaking I feel has been pretty good, but I think it's interesting how, like, this game I'm enjoying more, even though I'm, you know, not great at it. I'm not winning all the time. Whereas playing a first-person shooter online, I get frustrated when I die a lot. And I'm like, well, they're just better than me. Now I think, oh, well, I have a chance. It's not based on, it's not my reaction time that's letting me lose. It's I didn't build the best deck, or I didn't play the right card. Like, I like to believe that if you or a more skilled player were playing with the same deck that I had, that you could have won that game.
Well, there's
so
still
what keeps
there's
me
still
going
chance,
back.
You know. There's still the luck of the draw, and there's still how you composed your build and how the deck that you're playing against. If the deck that you're playing against is demonstrably better, you're going to lose, unless it's a really poor player. But I think they do a lot of really smart things that we've talked about before, which is they don't show you how many losses you've got. They only show you how many wins you've had, which is – it's psychologically important, I find. I think that it's a huge deal for me not to dwell on my win-loss ratio. Like your kill-to-death ratio seems to be like this the most important thing in so many shooters, and it just makes me depressed. You know, in this game, I can see that I've won X number of games, but I'm not dwelling on how many I lost. I don't know if you've ventured into the ranked modes yet, but those are really, really fun. And, you know, in the early ranks, you don't go down a rank when you lose. So you can only go up, which is really great. I think the game really opens up a lot. I don't know how much you've gotten into this yet, but the game really opens up when you get into the crafting. When you decide the kind of deck you want, and then you start building that deck specifically and disenchanting cards you don't want, turning them into arcane dust, and spending that dust on cards you do want.
My fear of that, of getting into that, is I also feel like that's when your wallet opens up.
Yes.
And where my aversion to free-to-play games, or the fortunate side of where we are with gaming right now, is that when I start hitting that paywall, even though I think this game is pretty generous with what you can do for free, I would just with every other free-to-play game, when I hit that point, I just move on to the next game.
But
right?
Christian,
there's always something else.
Well, all you really have to do with Hearthstone is grind quests. You get a new quest every day. Do the quests,
right.
You'll earn gold, and you never have to invest your real money. If you're patient enough, you don't have to invest money. You can just earn 100 gold and buy an expert pack, or you can earn 150 gold and go into the arena and try to win packs. And there really is a way to play the game without ever spending human money. It's just when you get impatient, you're like, oh my God, I really want that card, and all I have to do is pay a few dollars, and oh my gosh, I'm out of gold and I want to play arena.
Or if you quit having fun, if you view those modes, because you called it grinding yourself, right? I think that switch gets flipped when you view it as grinding and not getting to play and getting a reward. It's like, I'm playing this only to get this other thing. I think when you switch, your mind becomes focused that way, you'll open up your wallet at some point because you'll want to just get the thing.
Yeah.
And not enjoy the work, not enjoy the process to get there.
Right, but there's no difference between playing a game for grind and playing a game for fun. It's just the deck that you're using. If the deck you're using is unsatisfactory or less than fun, then you feel like you're grinding. But because you're grinding to get a better
deck. It's your
mindset. Yeah.
It's your mindset and going into it. Like, I'm having a good time with it still, but I think if it feels like work, like I got to do this so I can get that, then I think that's where it changes. But the game so far where I am is still, I mean, like, yeah, it doesn't make you feel dumb. If you try to play a card, it's not like, oh, idiot, you can't do that one. And it subtly highlights the cards you can play. Like, you still want to be doing math in your head, you know, to be aware of what's happening, but you don't have to. I think you can have fun and just play some cards. And I think that's what the game does really well. I think you called it this.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think you called it this back, you know, when it was still in beta. You know, it's a great... It's a great entry card game, but then becomes more advanced as you get into it. Like, it has training wheels.
Easy to learn, but that's difficult to master, which is the best games are. I have a fun anecdote to share. I this week looted in an expert pack my first legendary card, which was a cool experience because, and it was Deathwing. I don't know if you guys know the Deathwing card, but basically it's a 10 expense card, so it costs 10 gems to use it, which is the max that you can ever have. And once you use it, you have to discard your entire hand, and then it destroys every other minion on the board. And it's a 12-12 minion, so it has 12 health and 12 attack. So it's kind of...
packing some heat.
Huh?
That it's packing some
heat. Yeah, he's kind of a nuker, you know? He's kind of a nuker, but... a nuker in a very – that kind of can screw yourself too, because you have to discard your whole hand. Well, I got the card. It's not a card I'm probably going to use in many decks because it has a very limited use set and it sucks up one of your 30 cards. But I was so excited that I looted it, I put it into my deck immediately. And I've been playing Druid, having a blast playing Druid. And Druid, I have two Innervate cards.
I'm sorry. How many gems does it take to play? Did you say that yet?
10, which is the maximum.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had two Innervate cards in my deck, and I was the second player, so I got the coin, which gives you an extra gem. So I decided I just wanted to see this card played, and I was in play mode with a guy. And so I was able to ramp up to 10 when I only legitimately had 4, right? So I was playing against a mage. I used both my innervates and my coin. I threw down, and this is early game, so I still had a big hand of cards. So I threw down, and so did my opponent. So I threw down Deathwing. It made me discard my entire hand, obliterated everybody on the field, had this awesome animation when he slammed onto the table. I was like, ooh, cool. My opponent immediately cast Polymorph, turned it into a sheep, and I was completely screwed, right? Which was fine because I wasn't playing to win that game. I just wanted to see that card come out. But Hearthstone, you can't communicate to your opponent. There was no – I couldn't do LOL. I couldn't do, you know – I was just messing around, man. Good game. You know, I conceded, but there's no way to communicate anything other than well played or greetings or thank you, you know? So I said thank you, and then I conceded. And I think this guy must have thought I was the biggest moron in the world that I just he's like, yeah.
No, you're just a glutton for punishment. Yeah. You just show up.
Yeah, nice play of Deathwing, buddy. Polymorph. You know, it's a sheep now.
thank you.
Hilarious.
So I've never played Hearthstone, but I have recently I've really recently downloaded it for my iPad. But I was saying in the chat that I have a code for a free card pack.
Ooh.
I feel like I should give it away.
Well, if you want to give it away to Jeff me, I'll take it. Give it to somebody in the chat room. Do it like a number from 1 to 10, and each person can only put in. I don't know. Do whatever you want to do. The audio audience doesn't need to hear it. But
I'm going to put it in the chat room and the first person to redeem it gets it.
Well, have fun trying to decide that.
Okay, Jeff, talk for a little bit. I'll be right back.
I think actually, Andrew, you should play it because it has a beautiful tutorial. It gets you into the game really elegantly. It teaches the basics. It's not scary. You can play it. It's not going to eat your wallet right away. You can play practice mode against the innkeeper. You're not going to have to be playing human beings for a long time. It's great. But it's a game that I can't stop playing. I check my new quest every single day, and I grind that quest, and I make sure I play that game daily.
But I saw Mr. Kanata, Mr. Trachtenberg finally
huge
wowed you with his gorgeous eyes and his beautiful voice.
He batted the eyelids. He tempted me with sweet treats and bribes. Actually, what happened? This is huge. This is massive. This is crazy town. Because
which is why we saved it for an hour 10.
Yeah, are you ready for this? I have done the thing that I never thought I would do, which is I have found the love for Dark Souls. I'm in it. In it! What actually happened was, so we had Michael Fox on last week as a guest, and he was talking about his Dark Souls 2 love. And I said, we said all these things about, oh, man, I just don't think I could ever play that game. Da, 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 da. You and I both were saying that. Well, I guess someone at Namco heard because they reached out to me and said, you can have a copy of the game. And I was like, well, it's a free copy of the game. I owe it to them at least to try it, right? I have no loss.
It's a drug dealer. It's a drug
exactly.
dealer.
Exactly. And Dan, who has been on the show and is the biggest Dark Souls fan I know, I said, here's the deal, Dan. I will play this if you will be my Jedi Master and I can be your Padawan learner. And we get on Skype together and you guide me through the world. Okay, so I'm 10 hours into doing that. We did it this weekend.
I can show you the world.
Yeah. In it!
Death and more death and Jeff sucking.
Dude, Christian, I get it now. I get it. I get it. I understand why people love this game.
Explain it then. Okay. You have three sentences. You have a paragraph. Explain the love.
Okay, well, I will tell you a long story.
All right, Andrea, you want to go get lunch? Let's get out of here.
Andrea, have you played Dark Souls?
I have not for a very specific reason. I like to have fun when I play games.
Me too! this is my exact explanation. I was part of your world, and now I've gone through the other side. I broke on through to the other side.
We're just holding out for our free copies. We heard that if you say you don't like it on this show, you get a free copy of the game.
We have a I have a copy, actually.
Oh,
I,
son
I
of a...
Have it done, I have gotten around to giving it a go, because all I hear people talk about is just how brutally difficult it is. And I'm one of those people that I enjoy a game for the experience of it. I don't feel the need to put it on the hardest difficulty setting. For example, playing Infamous, I was playing it on normal. It was a little too stressful, so I dropped it down to easy.
Yeah, no shame in that.
If you judge me for that.
No shame in that.
You know, like,
hey, it's your free time. It's how you want to invest your free time. There's no shame in that.
Convert us, Jeff.
Okay, so here's what happened.
Yeah, so give me your pitch.
Well, instead of a pitch, you're going to hear my roller coaster ride of emotions. So here's what happened. First thing, download the game on Steam, boot it up. First thing, wow. On PC, Dark Souls 2 is gorgeous, gorgeous. And I'm a sucker for, you know, medieval fantasy worlds that I can wander around in that are really, really pretty. And one of the biggest turnoffs that I had of Dark Souls, the original, and Demon's Souls as well, is that it didn't feel like a world I wanted to hang out in. It was just kind of bland and gray and eh, right? Okay, so initially, very impressed, graphics, beautiful world. So Dan gets on, there's a tutorial section in Dark Souls 2, and I go through the wiki, we're talking to each other, he's recommending what starting class do you want to do, no, because starting class is less important in this game than lots of other games, because you can put your points in any stat you want and become whatever you want to be. So it's not like you're choosing something that's you're a warrior and you're going to be a warrior forever, whatever. So I chose Bandit because it had high dex and pretty decent survivability. But Bandit does not start with a shield, right? So I was dual wielding an axe and a dagger. And I was switching back and forth between two-handing the axe, okay? So I'm doing the tutorial section. I'm feeling all right. I died a couple of times on, you know, regular enemies, but I'm getting it, right? I'm getting the hang of it. I'm dive rolling. I'm getting behind guys. I'm watching their attacks. I'm doing all right. So then we get to this area, and Dan's like, okay, there's an ogre here. This is completely optional. The ogres are really hard and really challenging, but you're feeling pretty confident. If you want to try it, give it a shot. And I'm like, all right, I'll give it a shot. I'll see what I can do. Well, I start on the ogre and he kills me. And I'm like, okay, well, I get that. You know, I'm just learning his attacks and whatever. I go back, he kills me a couple more times, and now I'm sort of getting into it. And Dan's like, okay, it's all about being patient. It's all about being, you know, taking your time and running up to him and smacking him. Wait till he turns around. Wait till try to get him to, you know, swing at you and he'll fall over. And then you get one attack, but don't get greedy. Don't get greedy. You got to jump back and, you know, take your time, right? So I get into this protracted 20-minute cat and mouse game with this ogre, and I'm whittling him down and I'm whittling him down, and he smacks me once, and oh, I can't get away, and I drink my Estus, regain my health, and I'm playing this cat and mouse game. Now, because I don't have a shield, I'm not able to block, which is a major part of this game. So I'm literally just relying on getting out of dodge to get away from this guy, to dive rolling away. But I'm doing it, right? I'm whittling him down, and it is 20 minutes, 30 minutes. I'm taking my time. I'm one friggin' guy. And he's down to no health, like no health. And then I got a little greedy and I tried to just finish him off, because all I needed was one more smack on him. And he picked me up and he one-shotted me. He ate my head. He lifted me up. He put my head in his mouth and he munched on me until I died. And because I had invested so much time in killing that ogre and he didn't die, a lot of expletives, flames from the side of my face. So angry, ready to rage quit. And me saying to Dan, this is why. This is exactly why I don't want to play this game. I got so close. Nah, nah, nah. On the verge of losing it. On the verge of being completely done with this game. Dan's like, just, okay, stop. Don't fight this guy anymore. Let's go do something else. And then we got into...
Hold on. Quick impression from the listener, me. I feel like you haven't described anything new necessarily about these games. All I'm hearing is what it took you to get into it.
No,
is Dan being a wonderful mentor.
What I'm showing so far is that the game was living up to my horrible expectation and exactly what Andrea just described as being what why she doesn't want to play it. And this is the horrible first impression that I got that almost ruined me for the game because it almost confirmed every fear I had. Now we're getting to Act 2, where I make the turn toward the light and I can praise
is
the
this
sun.
Like, is this like the Peter Jackson Hobbit movies? It's going to be three movies for one story, Jeff. Can I just read the book
all right,
version?
I'll get to
it's
the
not that long of a book.
I'll truncate. I'll get to the...
I'm kidding.
No,
I'm
no,
kidding.
No. It's okay. I understand.
It's not that I'm not interested. It's that I'm not hearing anything... To me, it honestly so far seems like Dan, like, I agree. If you have a great friend that loves the game that will take you through it, because then Dan has kind of become your wiki, right?
Yes.
You're not sitting there needing to dive
through.
Well,
he's literally sitting on the other end of Skype opening. He's got the big hardbound collector's
yeah, which is awesome.
Book, like telling me what to do. Okay. So, on the verge of quitting, literally wanting to quit, he talks me down from that ledge. And which I should never have tried to fight this ogre because I didn't understand what a shield would do, like how it would make the game easier. But so we get me a shield, we get me a better weapon, and we're moving through the early part of the game. And here's where the tide really turned is there are these amazing systems in Dark Souls 2 that I sort of knew about because people had talked, I'd heard people talk about, but I didn't really understand. And that is how the game really is an MMO in its own way. It really is a communal experience. And that is, you get this thing called soapstone, and you first get a tiny soapstone or a bigger soapstone. And anybody that has a soapstone can jump into your game, can link between worlds and hop into your game. And when they are in your game as what is called a phantom, they have nothing to lose. So dying does not make them lose their souls, okay? They still die, and once they die, they leave your game and go back to their game. But they are able to be your buddy, and they can earn souls while in your game that they can use to level up or buy items or whatever. It's the only currency in the game. So there's a massive incentive for them to volunteer their time to be a part of your game. And it's also really fun for you to volunteer your time and be part of other people's games because you have nothing to lose, but you have lots to gain because you can farm souls and learn the fights without the risk. So once Dan started coming into my game and we started adventuring together and he could sort of be my tank, right? He could be out in front and soak up damage if he has to because he doesn't have anything to lose potentially. Or we can sort of tag team an enemy and he can distract them and I can run up behind them and smack them and all that stuff. Or I can sort of hop into his game or other people's games. I was hopping into strangers' games where you can't communicate except by gestures and you're discovering these items that are hidden because somebody just has you follow them or points in a certain direction and you follow them and, oh my gosh, I didn't know that was there. That beautiful communal experience hooked me. That's where I got, this is fun. Now I have the loot looks awesome. I'm excited because the way that the levels are designed, that there's really are really wonderful secrets around every corner. Things are in specific locations, so there's less randomness. You can go, I want to get this specific weapon, so I'm going to spend my time getting to that part of the castle. And I need help to do it, so I need these people to help me get past this boss or get past that guy to get that key to go into that area. I get it. I get it now. And I am looped into that fun loop. Now, it's still challenging, and it still requires a lot more time. And that soapstone mechanic is really still pretty clumsy, especially if you want to play with a specific person because you're just – the way it works is when you use the soapstone, you write your little glyph on the ground, and anybody that sees that glyph in their game can click on it and summon you into their game. So you can get this ring that you and your actual real-life friend both wear and inscribe with the same god so that only that god's people's glyphs show up in your game. So it's really clumsy. There's not just like, I want to play with my friend, click on my friend. But all those eccentricities, all those odd things kind of makes it more precious when it does work, and when they're really the risk and reward payoff really is fun. And I get what people have been saying this whole time.
So let me ask you another question. How would, if you had a telephone booth that could go back in time, how would you, in the convenience store, the 7-Eleven parking lot, convince you of, 2 months ago to play this game? Like, what is even your pitch to yourself that, because that would make someone, make a you want to play it having not played it?
I actually think I came to it at the perfect time because Dark Souls 2 is, I think, a refined version of all the games that came before it, and it's prettier. It's the world is more interesting, I think, and the designs are really beautiful. But I will say this: the shortest way I can say to give it a shot is, read up and play enough to get to the point where you have the soapstone and you can get into other people's games. Because once you can play that game without fear for a little while and learn the combat style and learn the way that enemies attack and be able to just die over and over should you decide to without – I mean, you can still die over and over in that game. And if once you get to a point where your souls are relatively low, yes, every time you die, you have less health the next time you're alive. But once you get down to like 50% of your maximum health anyway, and you're a complete zombie, who cares? Just get into that loop. And this game is not for everybody, but the combat system is fun. It is interesting. It is specific. And I think specificity in games is really fun. Every single weapon has its own unique attack, and you have to learn which weapons you like. It's not just going to be the one that has the plus to whatever. There are specific weapons that behave in a certain way that you might like or not like.
So my biggest turnoff for this game, and I think it still applies for this, isn't the difficulty. I know it's not in the same league, but I, beat Mega Man 9 and Mega Man 10, which are, and all the Mega Man, side-scrolling Mega Man games, 9 and 10 most recently. I soloed through Metal Gear Peace Walker.
Listen, we're not measuring our wangs here, buddy.
No. What I'm saying is I'm not opposed to challenge.
Yes, please not measure wangs.
I mean, at least not on a show that doesn't have video. Right? Am I right, Andrea?
But
I'm not touching that one.
What makes me not as interested in this game is, and I don't want necessarily a tutorial that guides me through everything, but it's that the fear of needing the wiki open or Dan's big book. I think I'd love to play it. This would have been for me a great college dorm game where a friend was already into it and we could sit down and play together. Or maybe if you get into it, or I can charm away some of Dan's precious hours to have him tutor me also. Like, to me, that's the biggest thing. And I understand that some people love that. It's like, oh, well, games are this game, you discover things. But with the systems being so unexplained,
yeah,
I feel like that I would still spend this time in this world and enjoying the combat system, but then realize that, I built my character the wrong way for how I want to play, and now I'm just kind of screwed.
Well, you
and
can't
to
really
me, that's
do
the
that.
Biggest hurdle the game
You can't
has.
Really do that, and there's also a respec item that you can find. So you can't really do that. I don't think you should be afraid of that, but I get it. This is not a game that it's fun to explore in, because if you wander around the wrong corner and there's an enemy that you can't possibly kill, you really do need to have a game plan. And I am fortunate in the fact that I did have a Jedi Master to be the Padawan learner to. And I don't think that I would have had it as much fun were it not a buddy system kind of situation. So I can only talk about my specific situation, but I can say I finally get what's so fun about this game. And I'm genuinely enjoying it and hooked on it.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. Hopefully that happens. Everybody finds their joy. Have you gone back to Elder Scrolls Online since you've picked up Dark Souls 2?
Only to feed my horse every day, but I definitely want to play more Elder Scrolls Online. I definitely want to play more of it. I'm so into that game, and I there's just not enough hours. I mean, I still want to play Diablo 3 more. There's too many, and freaking, we have like, 2 weeks until WildStar comes out? There's too many of these deep, long experiences that it's crazy.
Can I ask Andrea quickly about Lego The Hobbit? Because I love Lego games and I saw you're playing that.
OMG. If you guys haven't taken the time to go back to a Lego game recently, do it with Lego The Hobbit. It's amazing. I absolutely love it. So Lego games are known for their cheeky humor, and this is no different. If you guys have... Yes, cheeky humor. I will say, if you're not a fan of The Hobbit, you probably won't enjoy this game as much. It's still a really solid game, but they literally like narrate the whole movie using the VO from the movie, very similar to the Lord of the Rings games. I have just been having a really great time with it. John and I have been playing co-op, which is feels really great. And the split screen stuff looks really nice. I know sometimes when they've done split screen, it can get a little confusing when you guys wander away from each other.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have seen that, the way that they do that. So they split the screen down the middle instead of doing top and bottom. It's left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you wander away from your partner, like this line comes down the middle of the screen so you can see which part you're in individually. And then when you're back in, together in the same area, the line disappears, which works really well this time around. In previous games, like Harry Potter is the first one I thought of where it kind of looked visually confusing. But it's really fun. And they are doing some things with the gameplay that you're like, how did they make this into like a mini game? You know, it's. I've been really loving it, and it looks amazing on the PS4.
So are you a big Tolkien fan?
What?
Like, for me...
Tolkien?
That's how his name. Tolkien.
Tolkien.
Tolkien. What I love about the Lego games are, like, all the unlockables, and I think, like, the characters, and one of my least favorite was Indiana Jones, like, a franchise that I love. But I felt like I was like, oh, I unlocked this guy, whereas Lego Marvel... You know, I'm such a, or in Lego DC, I enjoyed unlocking all of those characters. Is it something that if you're into the lore, the unlockables are big? Does this go into Lord of the Rings unlockable characters, or is it only characters from the smaller Hobbit universe, which is still a big universe, but not as grand in scope as Lord of the Rings became?
I wish I had a better answer to give you. I'm not far enough in the game. I only have about half of the characters unlocked. And, I mean, there's, like, I think at least 40 or 50 unlockable characters. But I will say, as far as the actual, like, the gameplay mechanics involved in those, I think LEGO Marvel Super Heroes did it better because those characters just inherently have more unique opportunities, right? Like, the gameplay for the Hulk is going to be different, you know, than it is going to be for Iron Man. And I think that the characters inside the universe of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings just don't have that kind of flashy gameplay mechanic opportunity. But that doesn't mean that they're not awesome. I mean, you get to play with all of the dwarves, you know, and you get to play with Gandalf and Bilbo. And there's a, you know, section where you get to play with, you know, some other really great characters. I don't know, like, it's just fun. It's a really fun game, and it makes me laugh constantly because the fat dwarf is always eating in every single scene, and it's the best.
And I think they promised the new movie will be included as DLC, right, for this game. I don't know if it's paid or not, but I like that idea of the game you bought will become the complete Hobbit experience, and it's not next year they'll release the last movie.
Unlike your Blu-rays.
yeah,
I wanna find out what is on a listener's playlist. So we have somebody from 850 on the line. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's on your playlist this week?
My name is Matthew from Tampa, Florida. I've actually been going back and playing some old stuff until Child of Light comes out tomorrow, basically just Path of Exile. And I was the one that actually debated you about the whole journey versus destination thing with MMOs. Mm-hmm. If you are more about the journey, Elder Scrolls is going to be your place. If you're more about the end game like I am, Wildstar is going to be my place.
Yeah, I am very, very, very excited for Wildstar. Oh my gosh, these massive experiences are coming out, and what, June 4th, Wildstar comes out. There was a beta weekend this weekend. I only played a little bit of Wildstar because I was playing Dark Souls for 5 hours a day with Dan. But yeah, I mean, the game looks phenomenal. I have really good friends who were crazy leveling up during the beta weekend, which I don't understand. Why do people want to level up during a beta weekend? It's just going to get wiped. Anyway.
I don't know, Hearthstone beta player.
No, I know. I have regrets. I've got a few.
You're like, I want to watch you talk to yourself in the mirror, because I bet you do a great Green Goblin, Harry, or Norman Osborn, a great Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, why are you leveling up? A great Smeagol. Yeah.
My precious. All right. Oh, we're running low on time. We got to get to tabletop time. Tabletop time. Tabletop time. Tabletop time. Right now. Right now. Andrea, I understand that you just bought a board game.
I did. I bought it at PAX, actually, which was just a couple weeks ago. I bought King of Tokyo.
That is an excellent choice. If people are looking for a great intro board game, I've never mentioned it before on this show, but I thoroughly enjoy King of Tokyo, and it's a great, inexpensive, easy to learn, easy to play, really fun, cool themed game. Have you played it at James's house, right?
That is correct. That was the first time I played it, and I had such a great time. I was like, I must get this game. So I got
awesome. It. Awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. So King of Tokyo, for people that don't know, is a game where you are all playing giant monsters like Godzilla, who are all trying to destroy Tokyo, who are trying to be the predominant monster in Tokyo. And the way you do that is you occupy Tokyo. And while you are the occupier of Tokyo, everybody else's monsters can attack you. And so you have to play this kind of push your luck game of how long do I stay in Tokyo versus, you know, and score points versus not dying because everyone's attacking me while I'm in Tokyo. And the way you play is like Yahtzee. So you have dice and you roll these dice and you get to re-roll a certain number of times and you keep as many dice as you want from the previous rolls. So you're trying to decide what you want to have come up on these rolls, whether they are attacks or health or special powers. And each monster has unique special powers, and you can buy cards that give you additional special powers. Really simple, but very fun to play. I think it's a great game for new designer board game players.
Yeah, no, I agree. As somebody who is probably very much like entry level into the board game universe, I was very much just like your run of the mill board game player, like, you know, Monopoly, Sorry, Game of Life, that kind of stuff. This was really fun experience for me and very appropriate.
We call those Ameritrash games. And
thanks. Yeah, well, yeah, of course.
Anyway.
I call them classics.
Okay. Or classics that no one should ever play ever again. Because there's so much other better stuff. But I, this week, got to play one of the games I've been looking forward to playing since last year. It's one of the highest rated games on Board Game Geek. But I'm not going to talk about it because we're already running long. So I'll save that for next week. And that game is Terra Mystica. I'm so excited to tell you guys about that experience. But I also played a game called Coal Baron, which is interesting as well. And primarily interesting because of the components. Now, in Coal Baron, you are playing, as the names would suggest, a guy who mines and sells coal for points to win.
Oh, I thought this was the guy that was taking over for Letterman.
Coal Baron, yeah. That's funny. That's good. That was good.
I could tell it was funny by you saying it was funny and no one laughing.
Cheeky humor. Cheeky humor. in Coal Baron, each player has their own coal mine in front of them. And it's super slick the way it's made because the little coal mine shaft is this vertical cardboard piece in front of you, and it's got an inlay in the center that in which rests your coal mine cart, and it's like a little elevator, and you have four or five levels of coal mine, and the deeper you go, the more valuable the coal is. So you have different colors of coal. You have yellow and brown and gray and black, and you can literally slide that little elevator up and down that track in front of you, and you have to spend movement points to be able to move the elevator down, load the coal in, and bring it to the surface to then be able to sell it at the market. So you're adding mine carts to your shaft. That's no way to say it without using that word, I suppose. So you're adding, you know, horizontally digging further into the mine to add new units of coal to be able to excavate, all the while having to maintain balance between your left-hand side of your shaft and your right-hand side of your, yes, shaft. I found the game to be pretty darn good. It didn't go to that upper echelon of amazing for me. I don't know exactly why. There's something that just didn't coalesce, and maybe it was the end game where by the end of the game there were certain members of us that we had these things to use, but we had nothing to use them on that could actually even get us points. So we had to have planned better ahead of time in order to be able to use things right at the end game. So it just kind of fizzled out rather than ending in a climax of glory. And I just used climax and
what you talking about
at the same time. And I apologize to everyone.
Then I can dig it.
Anyway, but it's cool sliding your elevator up and down. And I thought that was clever. And I wanted to explain that to the gang. So there you go, gang. That's Coal Baron. Yeah, I'm excited, Andrea, to hear you playing King of Tokyo, because I think you're going to be glad you bought it.
Well, maybe I'll have to throw a game.
Yes, do it, do it.
It's the perfect time for the, you know, I mean, I feel like that game, but with Godzilla coming out and all accounts looking awesome, I think it's the perfect time to throw a King of Tokyo game night. Do it.
There's
big.
A fun expansion for that game, too. If you like it, you can buy it. All right, let's we'll wind up the show here with a couple of calls. I have somebody on the line from 479. 479, what's your name? Where are you calling from? And what do you want to talk about?
Hey, Jeff. This is Billy from Northwest Arkansas.
How you doing?
Oh, good, man. I just have a quick question for you. If Blizzard was to do something so terrible as to make like a really nice, chunky, you know, awesome version of Hearthstone, all cards included, that was a physical copy of that game. One, would you want to play it? And two, how much would you pay for it? Thanks, man.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. That is...
Jeff would steal my daughter and sell her for
That's
this
true.
Game.
I would. I would. And I hope that I would be able to get more than one copy for your daughter. That's all I'm saying.
It depends how chunky my daughter is.
I think that that's actually more likely than not likely. I think that Blizzard at some point will have a physical version of Hearthstone. Now, I don't think it will be a living card game, which is kind of what you're describing. A living card game is one where you buy all of the cards in sets and you don't have to collect them. I think that it would be a collectible card game because that's the model upon which Hearthstone is designed as a digital game. So I have a feeling it would be more like Magic the Gathering or Pokemon, where it is a collectible card game. But I feel like it's a kind of a no-brainer. Although there are a lot of cards that take advantage of the digital nature of playing, where it does things that would be a lot more difficult in a physical copy. But I would certainly buy it. I think, you know, Marvel Dice Masters came out this week, which we talked about when Tom Vassell was on the show. You can't get it anywhere because it's sold out, to my chagrin. I'm dying to get it. But that pricing structure would be awesome for Hearthstone. If you could buy Hearthstone packs for the same price as Marvel Dice Masters, or even for the price that you pay for the digital packs at $2.99 for a pack, I think it is, I think I would buy it for that. If it's a living card game version, I think you're looking at more like $50 for the whole shebang, but I doubt they would do that.
I think if it comes out, it'll come out as something different, maybe subtitled. I mean, Blizzard is fortunate enough that they have a lot of money. I imagine that there are companies that are looking to license the name for card games, but I don't think Blizzard necessarily themselves will get into creating a, you know, hard copy version of this game. And I think that they're a little hesitant to dilute the brand. Like, if a physical version comes out, it needs to be good. You know, it can't in any way detract from the money machine that they have on the digital.
Well, the
version.
World of Warcraft game, trading card game, is excellent. I mean, the production value.
And they certainly licensed properties before. Yeah.
Let's take another call before we have to get out of here. From 801 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what do you want to talk about?
Jeff, I'm super excited that you're going to talk about Terra Mystica next week. I'm glad you got a chance to try it. I think it's wonderful. I don't want to get too much into it, but one thing, when you tweeted out that picture, Scott Johnson, the wonderful cartoonist, replied and said, that looks really complicated. And I think one thing that board games need to do, it's really not, I mean, Terra Mystica, it's a hard game to learn, but once you learn it, it's really not like rocket science. And I'm hoping that some designer can help bridge that gap between like some sort of tutorial to kind of ease into certain board games. And I'm wondering what you think about that.
Man, that's an excellent call. I think that the best thing you can have to get into board games is a friend who has already played the game. and short of that, I like what a lot of these companies are doing as far as video tutorials. You know, a lot of these companies, as they put games out, they're putting out really well-produced official lessons in how to play. And you can just, you know, turn on the YouTube video and it'll describe how to play the game. That's exactly what we did when we started playing Terra Mystica. Is we literally – I started talking through the rules, and at a certain point we're like, let's just go to Board Game Geek, find a video of a tutorial how to play it, put it on the big screen. Because we, you know, through Apple TV, we just threw it on the big screen and we all sat around and watched the tutorial. It took 15 minutes, and after that we pretty much knew how to play. But more to your point, I think that having learning as part of the game would be a wonderful addition. I'm curious what you guys think. Andrea, what's your take on this? Are you put off from designer board games because of their complexity?
I certainly am. I think that the learning curve is particularly steep unless you have an expert in your group like yourself. And I think that is, you know, part of the lure for that community, isn't it? Kind of like how people in the MOBA community are super proud when they are good at MOBAs because it's the barrier of entry is so high. Isn't that, would you say, as somebody who's part of that community, that's kind of like a badge of honor that you wear?
Well, I'm certainly proud of being able to teach games. I love the feeling of being able to teach a game to somebody and make it seem not scary and clear. But I would not say that it's a badge of honor, the barrier of entry thing is a badge of honor. In fact, I think board games are unique in the sense that you can't play them without other people. So, and you have to have other people in your immediate vicinity. It's not like you have this vast internet of people that you can hop on and play with. You need to have other people who are willing to jump in. So it doesn't really feel good when you bring a board game out and everybody's like, ugh, I don't want to, that just sounds too cool. Can we just do something else? So I don't think that that is necessarily the same draw as some of the other things that you're referencing.
No, well, that's fair. And I think it's also worth mentioning, as other people have mentioned in the chat, like Lawman did, that time is really the thing that board games take the most of, which is maybe why people give you those groans when you bring a board game out. Because I had some friends invite me to come over on a Saturday to play Twilight Imperium.
Well, Twilight Imperium is the longest game in the world.
Like, have like 10 hours to devote to this game.
I mean, that's it's like saying people invited me to watch the Lord of the Rings trilogy one day. Movies are so long these days. It's like, well, you know, you happen to be picking the longest version. But yes, I take your point.
But I think board games also too have that reputation because when you unbox them and display them, everything is there. Like your picture, you know, it was on Instagram or whatever. Like everything is there on the table. Imagine if you wanted to play Dark Souls or, you know, any game, even a simpler game like Gears of War, and every system, every piece, every character was out on the table and every map was in front of you, you'd be like, well, this looks like pretty overwhelming. But it's not as if when you start playing a board game, okay, you got to use all 30 of these pieces at once and memorize where they are.
Yeah, it's harder to compartmentalize because there's no compartments. It's all right there. That's a great point too, Christian. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Really great calls this week. Fantastic. Thanks, guys, for all those great calls. I wish we had some time for more, but we'll be back next week, Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. If you want to call in, remember, our number is 512-518-5714. We really had fun talking to people, and we really had fun having you on, Andrea. Thank you for spending time with us, and I can't wait to have you on again.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Where can people see your stuff this week?
I'm always excited to. Well, you can see me Monday through Friday on Escapist News. That's youtube.com/escapistnews is where my show lives. You can also watch it on escapistmagazine.com. You can follow me on Twitter, which is probably where I'm the most active, and that's at Andrea Renee. And, yeah, looking forward to starting my new gig at GameStop TV, which begins in June.
Well, congratulations. So I wasn't aware that that was public knowledge. I'm so happy that you're able to announce it. That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, I haven't done like a big rollout announcement yet, but it's kind of out there in the wild. But yeah, starting in June, you'll be able to see me inside GameStop stores around the United States.
Fantastic. And you'll be able to see Christian inside a couple of GameStop stores, but mostly turning down pre-orders for things. Right, Christian?
Yeah, that's true. I'll be there for Destiny and Batman. Those are my pre-orders. Live Improv versus Stand-Up is at UCB May 8th. It's an awesome show. One improv team, two stand-ups. I'm really proud of it. It's been going for over
a year. It's
a fantastic
show. And if you live, really is amazing.
Yeah, thanks, dude. If you live in New York, Boris Hyken hosts it for us when we are not out there at UCB East. So it's bi-coastal at UCB. And then my Nerdist podcast is called What's New. It's stand-up comedy. The next one of those is May 13th, which is a live show. And then it's also a podcast, which, speaking of comedy, I have a very crappy quality clip of a new bit of mine on my YouTube page. I'll leave it up probably for another week, and I usually take things down because I don't like bits living online for forever, but it's at youtube.com/Christian Spicer. It's from a show I did at an improv out here, and it's called Saving Time, so you can find it there. The production quality of the clip is just a crappy point and shoot, but I'm proud of the material. So if you want to watch it, that's where to find it.
Very cool. Speaking of YouTube channels, my YouTube channel is rocking and rolling with new content 3 days a week. You can check that out. Jeff Cannata. Oh, excuse me. That's not right. YouTube.com/CannataJeff with two N's.
Great Spider-Man review.
Thank you. Yeah, my Amazing Spider-Man 2 review went up last Friday. So if you're thinking about seeing that movie, it's spoiler free, so you can check out the review before you buy your ticket if you like. And I'll have more content coming this week. Also, follow me on Twitter, Jeff Cannata, with two N's and one T. And if you ever want to send an email to the show, you're welcome to do that. I neglect to mention that every time. We have dlcfeedback@gmail.com that we check every week. So if you'd like to send in a question or a comment on the show, we certainly welcome that. As well as do we welcome your lovely reviews on iTunes. Thank you so much for doing that. It really does help the show. Also, tell your friends. All right, that'll do it for DLC this week. Really fun. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.